Hello, and welcome to episode 235 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of Indigo Park, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard.
Dan. That made me a little bit aroused. It's a little bit of meat gone in there, I tell you. blood flowing to it as we speak.
He's swelling.
And you can hear my co-hosts, the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And a man so talented in the art world, he can even make beautiful paintings with coffee.
Is that what you just changed?
It's Tony Esmond.
Changing the script. I'm changing it.
I'm changing it in the fact that I hadn't written anything new. It was last week's bit.
Oh, okay.
But yes, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Yeah, hello, everyone.
Coffee. Because I didn't have any water for my brush, so I thought, oh, what coffee? I'd use that.
Yeah.
I'll paint it with coffee.
I tell you what, me and Dan have been privy to this amazing collection that you've been working on.
You're my dealers. You're the ones who started this sad fucking journey off by buying.
It's not
me.
Sad, it's exciting. Sad.
Yeah.
And okay. It's probably going to end up on our sponsors, which we'll talk about in a bit. But before that, this week we're joined by our first guest of 2020. Yes, he's an illustrator and cartoonist, creator of The Misadventures of Springheel Jack and Captain Fishbeard, and makes one hell of a sexy gif. It's our pleasure to welcome Tom Spark to the show. Hello, sir.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good, man. Good.
We are good. Now, in order to clear that up, some people are thinking, what are they talking about? GIFs?
I don't even know what one is.
Is it a GIF or is it a GIF? Let's cover.
I don't know. I thought of that.
I would say GIF.
It's GIF, isn't it? Yeah.
So. GIF's the thing you spray in your kitchen.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's G for graphic, isn't it? So
yeah,
G. Yeah. There we go. Sold.
There we go.
Put yeah, definitely GIF. Then. Finally, good.
Yeah.
GIF.
But if you go on Tom's social media, you can see his face.
A lot of winking going on, Tom. Sort of knowing winking.
Yeah.
Quite. Yeah. Let's say borderline sexual. Let's say it.
Yeah. No, I'd say it's over that line.
So yeah, tonight we're talking about kids' comics.
with Uncle Tom winking at you. Yeah, here we go.
Oh, God. You know where you can find lots of great content, though?
Comic House.
In Beast Comic Belly. House, yes. Yeah. They are our sponsors. They're sticking with us. And, we've been talking about planning to take over the world this year with our sponsors. And they're a great lot anyway, but they're indie comic marketplace that we fully support. On their website, there's a huge selection of titles there, and lots of people just posting it, you know, hosting their hard copies that they can sell there. You can list your book on there for free, start selling your book straight away. What are you talking about?
Sorry, I've started the app, and I went to look at a comic, and some of the adverts come up, make a noise. Sorry.
Oh, well, we couldn't hear anything. What kind of noise?
It was like a fake tennis game. I don't understand these things.
What did it sound like, Tony? Replicate it.
You know when the ladies hit the ball in tennis?
Do it. And that's
like a tennis impression.
That's on the Comic House app.
Yeah.
So, which is it's amazing, and you can.
It's amazing. Is that where you went with that?
Yeah, it is, because that audio clip is going to be playing in my mind for the rest of the week. Haunting. But anyway, the app itself is brilliant. We check it out every week. I finally got a chance to read some books I've wanted to read on there for a while. They may not be in the recommendations this week, but they will next week. And it's from a creator who's really become one of my favourites. But I'll talk to you guys about it off air. You know, you'll have to wait for that next week.
I saw you post about this. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Did you?
So when you said you just read this.
That's this week's recommendation.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, there's loads of stuff on the app. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
Well, bringing the back to kids' comics, we've got The Hall Chronicles, Volume 1.
Hey, good for kids.
Yeah, story synopsis, a collection of stories written by Tony Esmond with art by a revolving cadre of fine artists. They tell seedy, some sad, some funny, and some disgusting stories of prostitution in London. Not for the faint of heart, you have been warned.
Yes, and we do want to stress, even though we joke about it every week, it's quite a serious and thought-provoking book.
Yes, yeah.
So
sponsored by milkshakes, Shake Shack. Let's say that. Shake Shack.
Other burger joints are available.
We're just saying that I think it's been a little slow on Comic House, the updates of new issues, but we can put that down to Christmas, New Year, where basically no one's updating comics.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, I sent it. I had to have quite a long conversation with Pete, God bless you, Pete, because I'm an idiot and couldn't work the app. But the he fixed it for me, and after submitting the PDF, it was online in easily 20 minutes.
Yes, brilliant. Yes,
yeah. That's pretty good.
If you're a creator out there who wants to get your work just to out to as many people as possible, and we've said this before, if you've just got old work that you just is just gathering dust on your hard drive, upload it to Comic House, because you know you will get money for it.
Yeah.
And speaking of last, people reading it. Last week we had Dave Robertson on. I don't think he's on the app yet, but he's certainly on the shop front. You can buy his comics by going through the shop bit of it as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's well worth...
With the Comixology, like, that can take up to 3 weeks to a month to get your bloody title on there from the moment you submit it. And
right.
You do get like a week or so heads up, but you don't really have any control of when that's going to be like live. So that's one of the things I really like about Comic House.
Yeah, and it is helping with creators from all over the world as well. I know we're a UK-based show, and we talked mainly to UK creators in the indie scene, but there's creators from all over the world putting their books on there, and it's great stuff, and the library is only growing. It's not like these Netflix and stuff where stuff will be on there, and then when you want to watch it, it disappears.
Yay.
It's happened to us all.
Fucking Samurai Cop.
Oh, is that gone now? Is it?
No, it was on Amazon. It disappeared for months, and then it came back.
It's just come back. Okay. Now. Yeah. So Dan had a lovely Christmas because of that. But yeah, comichouse.com. There's only £3 a month subscription. There's a 14-day free trial, and you just get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. So check it out now.
Mm.
And it's a database only going to grow and grow and grow over the next year. So yeah, check out comichouse.com. That was all right for our first.
That wasn't smooth, but it was better than some.
Well, you know, I mean, we
did all right from that last one in the quiz.
Yeah,
that showed we've been fucking paying attention.
That was good. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Fucking hell, Tom messaged me to say that I think he had a stomachache from it being so tense in the room. At
really? It wasn't that bad here.
No, I mean, because me and Dan were recording in separate rooms. For those who don't know, last week we had our sort of big, fat, awesome quiz of the year where we took on another indie comics sort of podcast, and this year we took on That Comic Smell.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way,
by one point you pipped them.
We retained the belts.
Yes. I've already been in contact, by the way, with the Lakes. And said, you're next year. So we're up against him next year. So this Pete, he's no slouch. I'll tell you now.
Yeah.
I know the stuff nicking in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But top questions, Tony. And thank you to that Comic Smell guys for, you know, just being absolute legends. So if you haven't checked the show out yet, just go back, because it's just a bit of fun.
It was a good fun one. Really funny one.
And play along, because the questions are pretty bloody tricky.
And the legend that is Sadaka was on it.
Yeah. Yeah. He loved peanuts.
To keep eating them.
Yeah. But that was then, this is now, and it's the it's the beginning of a new decade, and
2020, guys,
and a year of shows, and another fresh year of shows lays ahead of us. And we've been doing some scheduling and sorting stuff out, and we've already got some really exciting stuff to talk about in the first couple of months of this year. New topics, new genres, new guests, etc. It's brilliant. But we thought we'd start this year off the right way by having a really positive outlook and talking about kids' comics and all ages books. Now, we've covered it a few times on the show, but as we start off 2020, I mean, I think it's never felt more relevant to this medium we love than right now, kids' comics, because no matter how much like fanboy arguing or soapbox hollering you see on social media, and there can be a bit of it, let's be honest.
Yeah.
There's an enormous audience out there of comics who isn't involved in any of that, because they don't have social media accounts, most of them, I guess. And that is the next generation of readers. And it feels like, over the past few years, the indie scene has really sort of woken up to kids' comics and all-ages comics. Do you think that? I mean, I know they've always been there, but we're seeing...
I hope so, yeah.
We're seeing a bit of a boom.
I think that maybe this is going to be fucking a bit controversial, but I feel like they're dropping the ball on comics. We've got like people like Phoenix who are flying the flag and doing great, but like the indies is really taking the ball with like doing kids comics and run with it, and it's great.
So I think to start us off, and this topic is going to go in all kinds of conversation directions, and we've got some, we're going to talk about workshops a bit as well, which we're looking forward to talking about in a sec. But to start us off, Tom, you are no stranger to all ages comics and books and children's publishing in general, which I know is a completely different kind of field. But how do you feel about the current state of like comics for kids?
I think certainly when I was a kid, it was better. I think there was a lot more out there than there is these days. I don't know whether it's a function of poorer sales. I know that something like the Dandy closed down a couple of years back because there wasn't a demand out there. As Dan's mentioned, the Phoenix seems to be doing very well. It's been going at a very, very high quality for a number of years now. And that's one that certainly I still read with my kids now, and it's getting them, you know, it's a good tool to kind of bridge the gap from, with, you know, younger kids are used to, you know, picture books, and for them to make a leap once they start to read properly into a, you know, sort of a large fully sort of text heavy page, I think it is quite a leap. And I think comics can, or graphic novels certainly can, bridge that gap and also provide you know, availability in every single genre, and something like the Phoenix will bring that together really, really nicely. So you know, I read Jamie Smart's Bunny versus Monkey with her, because she finds it really, really funny. She likes the style of the animation there, sort of the cartoons in it. We'll flick the page and it'll be something that isn't for her, and then we'll go on to other things as well. But, you know, my other daughter might be interested in the other things in there as well. So I think the variety in that sort of thing is really, really key. You know, as far as I know as well, that, you know, the Beano's still selling in very, very decent numbers. But there isn't that many out there that you could say these are successful, reliable publications. I think there have been some that have come and gone a bit, and the ones that, especially the ones that included independent artists. But yeah, there certainly could be more out there. I think there's certainly a market out there for sort of comics. I speak to a lot of kids at conventions and stuff, and yeah, there is a huge demand for that you know, sort of younger ages comics, be it all ages or specifically for younger ages. I think there is definitely a gap in the market there that people could exploit. And obviously we've all been involved with the Spark from Fair Spark, which is exactly the sort of thing that I'm talking about, because it hits a lot of the different buttons for kids. And, you know, like I say, some kids will like everything in it, some kids will latch onto one thing and just be wanting to buy that and read that story every week and that sort of thing. But I think that's exactly what it's going to be about. It's going to be something for everybody in there.
I mean, the market itself, Justin, because a lot of us creators out there, no matter who you are, all over the world, there's probably the story of, oh, I remember walking into my newsagent or my local comic book store or something like that and seeing it front and center. You know, I read Battle, I read Beano, I read, you know, whatever, Archie, whatever your comic was, because there was the availability there in the mass market. And that kind of died away over the past, like, 20 years, hasn't it? I mean, Tony, when did sort of things start coming back? Was it Diamond that affected that, do you think?
I don't know, really. I think it was obviously part of it was the when comics moved into comic shops, I think, was maybe the beginning of the decline, depending on your point of view. I think that then news agents often didn't get Marvel and DC. And then, I don't know, it's a weird one, isn't it? There's still Commando in W.H. Smith's, you know, there's still 2000 AD. There's a few things that you can go and pick up. This I know Dudar has stopped doing the DC books, but the Marvel reprints monthlies are still in there, and they're quite expensive, but they're quite a big chunk of comics as well. Having brought a son up, you know that scene in Clockwork Orange where they hold his eyes open so he can view the horrible movies. That's how I brought my son up to read comics, you know. And he was sort of 8 or 9 when Ultimate Spider-Man was going. And he fucking loved that comic, and that's completely suitable. Because it hits an age slightly above his. I think sometimes that's important. It's you look at stuff like 2000 AD and Battle and Action, and it appealed to me because it was slightly dangerous, it was slightly older, there was something almost visually addictive to it, you know. And he was so excited by seeing Spider-Man, a kid he could look up to, you know, sort of high school kid. And it was consistent. And it was on his pull list, and he, you know, from a kid, I used to buy it for him, and he used to love it. He used to read and reread it, which I think is an important element of comics for kids.
Because
comics are so readably, you can read them so quickly, you need to have a readability thing. I think another person who's sort of an unsung hero that I think of the UK children's comic scene is Mark Jackson. So Mark does a lot of that stuff, doesn't he? He's in the Spark as well.
Yeah,
and he's good. And I'd put you and him, Tom, as a sort of similar age specific, stylistic, funny, friendly, you know.
I think you've hit it on the head. I thought about it, but I see put us together on the tables. So I think that's a very good point.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Cool. You're right there, actually. Yeah.
And I think, but to go back to your question there, Vince, I think when they started ghettoising us as comic readers by putting comics into speciality shops, I think maybe that's when the decline. It's because it should be a mass market, mass readable. Comics were for everyone back then, weren't they? Not for just for the comic guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the school ground comic conversation, whether it be about TV comic or the dandy or whatever your era is, you know, I think has gone, and I think that's a shame. And now they talk about YouTube clips and videos they've seen.
Yeah,
you know.
And I think, you know, we always talk about how healthy the community is, and obviously a comics community is great and fantastic. But when you're talking about like inspiring this next generation of readers or trying to get your books out to as many people as possible, you have to move beyond the community. The books need to get out to those, you know, you got people like little heroes like trying to get comics in the hands of kids that just aren't well at hospitals and stuff, and like, you know, and there's those people, that those parents that walk into a WH Smith's and the parents don't care about comics, but it might shut their kid up for half an hour.
And the problem I think is we've gone for the Pat refers to as the hamsterization of comics, and I think that applies to kids comics as well. We've gone to the Waitroseization of comics, haven't we? Yeah, it almost seems like comics and graphic novels are bought for kids by parents who, with that disposable sort of middle class, you know. Well, it should be for all classes, and it should be especially for the lower, you know, the working class people who can, you know, occupy their kids, you know, while they're getting a haircut or whatever they're doing. You know, they're out for work, and you know, I don't think we're seeing enough of that.
And no. I think those books, like obviously, I was a Marvel kid. I was reading like the Spider-Man and the X-Men and stuff. I do feel like, and it felt like a lot of these bigger titles, they were easier to get into. They were easier to just pick up and just read, and you know, you were already in the universe.
But Marvel groomed the UK, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel groomed us as kids.
Yeah.
They groomed us into comic readers because they produced weekly, cheaply produced reprints of their comics.
Oh, and I love the reprints. Yeah,
you know,
and certainly, like, you know, you had the Transformers books, you had the reprints, and then you had the UK artists doing all those Transformers books. Loved all that. You know, I've got a pile of Action Force books that I'm desperate to get started on, and I cannot wait to start rereading all of those.
Yeah.
But I think certainly with the modern, you know, if we're talking about the big two for a small moment, like, I don't think they're necessarily that appealing to this new, you know, you're not going to get new readers if you give them some of these books, because they're dealing with, a lot of them are more adult themes. I'm not saying for mature audiences, but just purely, you know, you don't, I mean, we absolutely adore the book we were talking about before we started the show, but like House of X or Powers of X, you're not going to give that to
an eight-year-old.
Yeah, you're not going to give it to an eight-year-old because, you know, that is a completely different kind of book, isn't it? Whereas I was the kid that, you know, Uncanny X-Men, you know, just people in wherever they were just having big fights. And one of the issues I was thinking about, the Black Widow, Captain America and Wolverine issue, which was just
amazing.
You can just jump straight head in, you know, into that, and you didn't need to know anything.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, that's the whole argument, isn't it? It's the complication of the universe that puts people off.
Yeah.
And it puts adults and it puts kids off, you know.
Yeah.
I think we need to get to the point where you shouldn't worry about what's gone and what's happening. You should just be able to enjoy the issue for what it is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think just quickly going back to what you said before, Vince, is about the venue for the sale of comics. Is I actually think, and I actually see this from Nobrow's point of view as well as the sort of small press scene, is the family friendly comic conventions are the best places to introduce kids to comics.
Definitely.
And I actually think it's better than the local newsagent, because kids are bored, they're shopping, they're not interested. You take them to a comic convention. And one of the best ones for this is somewhere like Nottingham or MacPow.
The last Nottingham, I was so pleased. It was so many kids around, many families. It was the best turnout that I've seen since I've been going there, for like just kids.
There's definitely an element of that. I think the location helps there, and also the people who run it as well. The Bretts are it is family run, and it feels like a family atmosphere. You feel looked after, and you feel part of it. And it's a lovely feeling from that.
Mac Power's the same, man. Slightly smaller sort of thing, but the amount of Hildas I shift at those things, the amount of Lorena Alvarez's Nightlights, you know, the kids' books flying eye, that Hilda flies out, you know, and is handed, put into the hands of kids to read.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, so it's obviously kid in the right sort of environment, or in the, you know, you get them in the right moment. The kids' comics have never been stronger in some ways. There are kids' books that are just absolutely taking off. There is so many books.
The quality, man, I think is really high at the moment. You look at the quality, God bless them, of some comics at, you know, Hotspur or, you know, Mandy or something, you know, with these sort of, you know, they weren't occasionally.
Yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean?
We look back fondly. You can't touch what's being done now.
No, I won't harp on about it all night, but you look at the quality of Hilda. Mm. That's class, man. Yeah.
And I know there's certainly a lot of books that sometimes we hear about that we don't know about on this show, and we like to know about. But, you know, there's these creators out there that when we find out about them, like, they're selling like 250,000 copies of like their graphic novels.
Yeah, the Scholastic books and that sort of thing, they sell the biggest books that are sold in the world.
Yeah, and they're sequential storytelling. Yeah. They are essentially, they're comics and graphic novels, and they're absolutely smashing it. And there's probably a lot of people there's dullards like me who don't know about them.
No, me neither, and I should know more about them. I think one of the problems as well is, I think there's so many adult comics that adopt a childish style of drawing. I call it childish, a child-friendly style of drawing for an adult-themed comic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's confusing and off-putting for parents who come around and they see a thing and they think, oh, that looks a bit like, I don't know, a popular kids cartoon is at the moment. Is Steven Universe a kids? I don't know.
Yeah.
And well, they look at that.
You could say something like Scott Pilgrim. Huge. Enormous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But is it suitable for a kid?
No. Yeah.
It's not, though. Is it in the parent? You know, parents might pick up a book and think, oh, this looks good. And they turn the page one and there's, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, I don't know what we do about that. And I don't think it's something that you can stylistically say that you shouldn't be doing that. But I think it is a problem for parents. If I was a parent and I knew nothing about comics, and I went around looking at some of these books up, I'd go, what's all that about? They're talking about sex and, you know.
Yeah.
Not my kid reading that.
And it's the, I guess, the thinking of when you make a comic book or when you decide the audience, because there is a point where you're deciding what audience you're going for and how you're going to create it. That, you know, some people just say, oh, I'm just making comics for me, man. No, you are thinking about the people that are going to read your book. Don't be bloody stupid.
Well, if you're blogging it, you know what I mean? You're not.
Yeah.
If you're not bothered about sales, then you can do that, man, all day long.
I mean,
if you want to actually turn up and sell something.
I mean, with your work, Tom, it's bright, it's colourful, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, immediately I see it. And
it's got a bounce to it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know that you're someone that knows exactly who you're aiming this for and the sort of thing you're doing. I mean, does it factor into your work?
It does, yeah. I've always tried to try and draw by the ethos of, you know, I want to draw something that I would want to look at. As a baseline. But yes, you do have to work within certain parameters, and there are sort of, you know, certain lines that you put down to go, okay, my audience are not going to want to see this, or this is not appropriate to do that. Occasionally you want to put there's lots of silly jokes all over my stuff, and occasionally you do think of one which is maybe a little bit crude, and then you think, well, maybe I can get away with that and the parents will appreciate it, but the kids won't get it. But then you had to go, no, I'm going to pull back from this just in case, because
it's funny, isn't it? It does. I think sometimes we over worry, and I know exactly where you're going at.
Yes.
Without giving away the ending, me and Vince have written a strip that's upcoming in about a month's time, where it's a big burp. There's a big burp that occurs in it. And burps are funny. Burps are kid friendly. Burps make me laugh. You burp at a table now. If my son, when he was four, burped at a table, I'd laugh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny.
But I was seriously, and I still am seriously considering making it a fart. Now, is that, that to me? I don't know. I just keep thinking, now that's probably crossing the line. I don't know. Is it far too? You know what I mean?
Farts in my books, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry, Vince. I'm not going to change it now because you've drawn it already. But
certainly, I mean, if we talk,
we had a conversation about it, didn't we?
Yeah. I can't. But this is brilliant that we're going to have farts as a topic of discussion. I love it. but you know, farts in kids' comics are popular things, and they work. Whether you know, you may have grown out of like that humour, but they do genuinely work. There are books all based around that.
There are, aren't there? Yeah. Somebody was telling me the other day that there's David Walliams in one of his books, which is like hugely popular. Who knows why, but they are. And it's at one point said, called someone a slag in his book. And I remember one of his mums saying to me, oh, that's not right, is it? And I said, well, I don't know. Is it funny or not? I don't know if it's applicable. I haven't read it. I'm not, and neither will I. But there's things that you can get in. But to be fair, the main reason I didn't go with the fart mints is because you couldn't draw the face of the monster we so wanted in the drawing. You know what I mean? It would have had to have been
the
monster's bumhole, which wouldn't quite work.
which would have been a horror, unlike anything else you've seen.
Yeah, I totally get that with the part thing. It was just that added element of humour. I mean, in Springfield Jack, the first comic that obviously it's just gone out on sale, is there's a picture and there's someone's got a dog and it's just sitting next to them. So once it's been introduced, it's sitting next to them. Second panel, I could have had it just sitting next to him again, but that's a bit boring. So it was doing a fart.
That's the job.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, everyone laughs at farts still. I farted earlier, my dog barked.
Out of shock.
Yeah.
My son was drew some pictures of me today, like, that weren't very flattering, so he made a mistake there.
Oh.
And I drew an anus, like, farting in his face, and he was burst out laughing.
I mean, the fact that you actually used the word anus, Dan.
It's a medical term.
I didn't use anus with him. I said, oh, there's a bum farting in your face. And he wanted to grab it and show it to the mother-in-law who was just walking out the house. And I was like, no.
He already knows how to stitch you up.
Yeah.
Yeah, learning from my wife.
I can't wait for the housewarming. Is your mother in law going to be the housewarming?
More likely. One to watch out for. So there's a geezer coming called Tony. Keep your eye on him.
Don't dance with him. It's quite a mover.
Watch the hands.
Call me dad. Call me father in law.
Jesus.
Oh gosh, sorry, I think I'm crying a little bit.
I think the upshot of that is I think we need to give kids more credit, do you know what I mean? And that's like the 2008 example, is always the example that Action Comics is the same. Kids love a bit of fucking rough and tough, you know, rough and tumble, don't they?
I think you're right, Tony. They can take a lot more than we think they can. I think there is definitely that in it.
Yeah,
and that's why these comics sell. I mean, I actually read Hilda and I shit my pants for her, thinking, oh my god, she's going to die. I get like super involved in it, and the kids must be going nuts reading these books, thinking, is Hilda going to die, you know?
Yeah, so it's a real jeopardy. Like that cartoon, is it Over the Garden Wall on Netflix?
All right.
And that's like, there's elements in that which are bloody, that's quite creepy and spooky, and it's a kid's cartoon, but it's really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that becoming a parent changes the way you think about things quite dramatically, in terms of all media, films, books, comics, and everything.
Completely. I think people who insist on having, they should be allowed to put sex in everything, haven't got an 8-year-old son, or a daughter. You think, oh, really?
I used to roll my eyes when people said about, like, when you have kids, like, the way you think will change. Yeah. I thought, yeah, whatever. And then when you actually do them, it's like, fucking hell. There's so much stuff that you see the world, it's like a different lenses you're looking through.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, there's definitely an element of, you know, people say to me now, oh, there's this brilliant new BBC drama series, and it's about this kid that gets killed. No, thanks. Wouldn't have hesitated previously, but now I can't deal with that.
Yeah. There seems to be a lot of those at the moment.
Yeah.
We need more of that in kids' comics. No, we don't.
Buy this comic, you'll get murdered. That's a good catchphrase.
Flynn for comics.
It's like when Judge Dredd declares New Year is cancelled. You could say, buy this comic, you will die.
I like the sound of that. I think that might work.
I think you're right.
I wondered, you know, the Pat Mills got the, what was it, Action comic? It was banned after that one. I wonder how far you'd have to take it today to get a similar reaction.
Yeah, maybe it's just say on the cover of a comic there are two genders. I think you'd get it banned.
Yeah, you will.
Jesus Christ. Fucking hell. Well, that's the end of our show.
I don't say I agree with it. I just said that would be what
it's true. Right. It's true. But saying that, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of kids' comics, certainly with some of the larger titles as well, they have a kids' comics sort of version of everything that they're doing, aren't they? Like Judge Dredd has is it still doing the All Ages one?
Man, I don't think that lasted that long. I don't think it went well.
Yeah.
And tried to do it for a free comic book day one, didn't they? And it just looks stupid.
Mm. They're doing that one with the old... trouble is, how do you do a fascist totalitarian...
He's a murdering villain, basically, but on the Dread when you... that way, isn't he?
The fascist.
He murdered
complete fascist.
Yeah, he had a legion of kids of kids who were fans.
Yeah, but like trying to make a kiddie version of that is kind of
you can't do it. You can't.
You can do Batman and Superman and Captain America fine, but like Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
IDW do all the stuff that comes out of the cartoons, and they do all the sort of kid-friendly stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
And they do the Star Wars version of the kid-friendly stuff, don't they? And Nick Brokenshire works on it.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
And there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening, certainly with indie publishers. And the likes of... and some of them have, like, a kid's imprint of what they're doing, don't they? I know Boom have one. Is it Kaboom? Yeah, I think it is Kaboom.
Because
the book I'm going to talk about later is one of those. Okay.
Tom. Sorry, Vince, you go on.
No, you go on, Dan.
One thing I find about children generally, and you have to kind of confirm this or not, because you probably have more interaction with them at cons, is a kid might not be interested in something 1 minute, and the next minute it's their entire life. Like, they're so focused on it.
Absolutely.
Like, my son was like, couldn't give a hoot about Star Wars like a week ago, and now everything's fucking Lego Star Wars, Lego fighting, everything Star Wars. So is that the same when you try and win them around to get, like, to take a look at your books?
Definitely, absolutely. I've had, you know, parents trying to cajole children who are looking at them, you know, the cover of the Captain Fishbeard or something, and they've gone, "Yeah, I'm not interested in that." And then they'll go, "Go on, have a look at it. And then the kid's like, "Yeah, this is pretty good." And then they end up buying the whole set, or they'll come back next time I'm at the con and go, "I love this," or they'll get in touch and that sort of thing. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Dan. Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's certain ages of kids. If you get them into something and there's a hook that they can get hold of, they will just be, this is what I want to do, and I'll start drawing pictures of it, and then just, you know, it'll be there 24/7. You're absolutely right. I think that's
to be fair, they've probably got longer attention. They've probably got longer attention spans than adults these days.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Kids are looking at their phone and looking to see what's next on Instagram. Yeah.
We have a couple. I can remember one lad with it might have been at Cheltenham last year. No, Leamington last year. With he was round with his mum or something, and he was looking at the Awesome comic. We had just brought out four. And his mum was, he was like, wanted to get it. And I think it might be new, Vince. The mum was saying, "Is it suitable?" And he was like, not sure. I can't remember if they got it or not.
Vince is thinking, £3, £3, £3. Honestly, no, it might be. Yeah.
If I was in like his age and I got that comic, I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Because it had swearing, violence. You know, like, that's the kind of thing that would get you Kredos at school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's no nudity in it, really, is there?
No,
so
no.
Yeah, so it's fine for kids.
But they can deal with it. They can. So we do underestimate them. There is, you know, the odd F word or an S word in there, and it's, you know, it's not going to do them any harm. Like you say, Dan, it's going to give them a bit of kudos and potentially make them a bit cooler and more popular, even. So, you know, it's not all negative stuff.
I mean, I don't know about you guys. When I was like 12, 13, 14, I was watching like 18 films.
Oh,
like
I blacked into Terminator and stuff when I was 14 or something, you know. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it depends on the kid whether you're kind of right for that or not. And I think all my schoolmates were like, I was like the youngest in the year, they were the oldest, so they were kind of showing me Evil Dead 2 and shit. And I was, well up for it.
That explains a lot, to be fair.
Yeah, that explains a lot. I was seven.
So, but what about like online though, and web comics, and like comics that kids can read for free? I would have thought, you know, how do you market a web comic to kids?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's a that's a completely different kettle of fish as well, isn't it? You know,
it's really tough. I mean, I think the only thing that's worked for me really is social media, and obviously kids are not partaking in that, so you can't. No. You'd have to do something physical, like getting in a bit at you know cons and that sort of stuff on a face to face basis. And yeah, I think it is really really tough. I don't know what the answer to that could be.
And there is certainly like a lot of these publications, like the Phoenix and stuff. They have their PDFs. You know, they have online stuff that you sign up.
Yeah.
But a lot of this is well, not controlled. Maybe not the right word, but you know, the parents. They're signing up for the subscription. They're getting the comics. The parents are dealing with all of that stuff, and then they just hand it over to their kid, don't they? I mean, because Dan, you signed up for the Phoenix, didn't you? And you haven't looked back, have you?
No. Like we got a great big binder of them now. Like sometimes they turn up and not read, but other times like you have like a couple open, and as usual, always one he goes for. Like Tom was mentioning earlier, like it's the one strip each week that is the definite read. I've got to say, with the web option, that's really tough because people spend like they've got their entire job like sorting out analytics of browsing habits of people, but that's a very specialized one.
I don't know what the answer is. I don't know.
No, it's almost a realm of,
grown up. I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost a realm of comics where print is still the most important thing, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, I mean, because my son, if he's going to go online, which he doesn't, the only thing he's going to go to is straight for YouTube and watch some Wally play a fucking video game.
Spoken like a dad.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's even difficult because, you know, something like the Phoenix, it's not available in most newsagents and most shops. Mm. I think it was only... I can't remember the last time I actually tried to buy a physical copy in a shop. When I did, it was a couple of years ago, I think, and it was only available in Waitrose and a couple of other sort of specialist outlets. I think.
I never see it on the shelf. I've got to be honest with you. I don't go into Waitrose, and so you know, I don't really do any sort of supermarket stuff. I don't see it in any of the newsagents or anything. I go into bookshops. Yeah,
yeah, and that's. I mean, we know how hard the Phoenix is working to get their book out to as many people as possible, and it's an uphill struggle. For the mass market, I think, and also in a comic book shop, something like that. I mean, I'm guessing they might. Phoenix is in comic book shops, is it?
It's in some, yeah.
It's in some.
I've seen it. Yeah.
But then it's surrounded by so much more that could drown it out. You know.
And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's a real. Yeah, obviously, there's going to be a huge volume of comics that are jumping out to kids in those sort of circumstances.
Yeah. So how do we get more kids? Reading comics. There you go.
That's a good question. I think excuse them a bit more. I think that there should be some way of introducing those, because there's a lot of different styles of learning, and I know very much myself, and I think a lot of people in our industry are very visual people, and I learn visually by looking, and a lot of people will learn by rote or by doing or other different ways, but if I see something visually engaging, that's how I'm going to learn. And I think, you know, kids with looking at comics and graphic novels and stuff will help them to read. I think I'm sure that's helped me read when I was young, you know, consuming Tintin or Asterix.
It's a brilliant literacy tool, a comic.
Yeah,
you know, I've had a couple of friends whose kids have been like slow on the sort of reading front, you know, the reading age front, and I've recommended comics, and they'll see stuff. You know, a lot of kids are into football, or a lot of kids are into space, or you know, whatever it is. They'll see stuff in that story, and I think the way we get kids into comics is by educating the parents, as is the thing with most of them as well.
Yeah,
I think you have to go through the gatekeeper that is the parent. I think if the parent's not behind it, parent one gives them time to do it, and two has the money to actually buy the thing. Unless you go through the parent, I don't think you're going anywhere.
Yeah, because like if you see them at a comic book convention, whether it be an MCM or a smaller show, you know, one of the indie shows and stuff, people are already there for that thing. So you know, you've got your audience there anyway. But like you say, it's educating those parents who don't necessarily know about it. You know, these people that. As soon as they find out about, you know, Star Wars has a graphic novel that's perfect for kids, they'll pick it up because their kid likes Star Wars, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting out to those people that don't know about it that's the difficult thing.
Yeah, I think that there is. Yeah, and there is. I think a change in the psyche a little bit. I know I've supported teachers with doing stuff specifically for them to use with classes, because they know that, you know, something that's visually captivating for a child, you know, is going to keep their attention and they will learn more. I've also encountered teachers who will go, no, my kids have got to read books. They're not going to read comics because that's an inferior thing for them to read, which is, we know, a completely wrong opinion. As long as they're reading, it's doing them good. It doesn't matter what they're reading.
Indeed, yeah.
I mean, you have experience of both, like the comics for kids market and also children's book publishing. Now, they're very different sort of worlds. What is the view of, like, for instance, the children's book market on the comic market?
Children's book market dwarfs comics by fucking tenfold.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It really does. It is such a cutthroat competitive market that is a completely and utterly different scene. It is so... I mean, I mentioned David Walliams earlier. A lot of publishers don't like David Walliams because his books knock other books off the shelf.
Yeah,
it's like the French comic scene. As soon as something comes out, everything else gets shoved along and put in the, you know, somewhere else. It's such a cutthroat business with launches and a lot of money being thrown about for kids' illustrated books and also the sort of next book up. You know, the sort of tween reader type age. It really is. It's indescribable, man. It's. I mean, we sell more kids' books than we do comics at Nobrow by a long way. You know, I don't think it's any secret. I think, and nearly everyone, don't you look at people like Walker and all these sort of people, Walker Books. So they're selling loads of books. And if you look at a children's book that has got, you know, facts about Star Wars spaceships, I guarantee that will sell a lot more than the biggest graphic novel in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Because it's everywhere. It's in toy shops. It's in, you know, these sort of places. It'll sell a lot more.
Front and center in a Waterstones when it comes to Christmas or something like that. You know?
Yeah, the latest, you know, Gabriel Hardman Star Wars book. It'll sell much more. Yeah, it really will. It's such a big business, man. It's really, really competitive, and it's full of quite sort of shrewd, in the most part, I'm going to say, in the most part, women who know what they're doing around it. Really is.
I'm not totally a play with this sort of world. My kids aren't massive sort of Star Wars fans or anything like that. Do they have like a Star Wars comic that has panel by panel, you know, 6 or 9 panels actual comic of Star Wars?
Marvel do them, yeah.
Yeah. You get the one in the newsagents where you've got the like the figure, like the bit of Lego in it, and it's got a Lego comic, but it's Lego Star Wars. They kind of get around it like that. But I don't think I'm not sure if you can get one in the newsagent.
No, Marvel have got like 5 ongoings. They've got a Darth Vader comic. They've got, you know, all this sort of thing. They've got quite a few ongoings.
But
Saul writes a couple of them.
Yeah, but are they necessarily for everyone?
I don't know, man. I don't read a Star Wars. I haven't read a Star Wars comic
I mean, it's crazy that I'm asking that question about Star Wars, which, settle down, fanboys, it's essentially an all-ages kids film. Let's be honest. That's what it's a family film. Just get off your high horses and let the kids enjoy it.
Well, I reviewed that Star Wars comic about when Vader like kills the his that psychotic kind of nurse who kind of idolizes him, and I wouldn't let my son reading that.
Yeah,
no way. I don't think you'd get it.
Yeah.
It's great. I thought it was a fantastic comic, but yeah, there's no way.
So there's a lot of people doing really interesting stuff with these franchises, not just Star Wars, all the other things as well. But you know, they're also, you could say, coming at it from the grown up experience of, oh, I loved this when I was a kid. This is how I'd write it now.
I think I can see that. This was again, I'm not sure if he's still doing it, but certainly a year or two ago, Jamie Smart was doing the Doctor Who comic, which I think went into the magazine.
Rachel Smith's done some of them as well, hasn't she?
She did a few covers, didn't she? Which are absolutely fantastic. But yeah, that's the sort of stuff that they should be getting out there on a wider audience, not just on that sort of magazine front.
Yeah. There's got to be an all ages Doctor Who comic out there somewhere, isn't there? I'm not aware of it, but
There should be. A lot of these sort of comics that we're seeing on shelves are more like magazines that just have a comic book strip in them.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. The TV series of Doctor Who is aiming at, what, 4-year-olds, is it?
You're here to make friends, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not touching that, dude.
There is, so I think I might mention this point before, but like, it's maybe the kids shouldn't go on social media and see all that stuff about the comic stuff and cartoons, because sometimes it kind of devolves into a place that, like, oh god, why are you arguing over this and making this such a bloody issue? Like that She-Ra cartoon that come out, people were saying, well, it doesn't matter, like, it doesn't matter, she's got a boyish figure, it's just like the character, and like, weren't you sad boys or men, just leave it alone and move on, you like fanboys, whatever. And then a couple of weeks down the line, there's people posting up like lewd pictures and like talking about how like they want to be with a character and stuff, and it's like, you can't do both of these, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
and I'm just glad that bloody kids don't get to see all that online. I know it's like a 16 year old to get online, but like that moving on from childhood stuff.
Yeah,
I feel like some people need to do that and don't constantly judge.
I mean, we've all written our own. We've all written our own Quantum Leap / fiction, haven't we? Yeah. Do you mean?
Oh boy. But there are those, like, I mean, like the She-Ra series. I mean it's fantastic for a new audience. They're not,
my son loves it.
Yeah, they're not making it for these internet people who are then doing all this fan art and stuff. They're making it for a new generation of people who are probably going to love those characters. Yeah, and it's a great and well made show, just like all the shows were in the past that we come to love. You know. But then, dare I say it, it's when the grown-ups get hold of it that they spoil it.
Yeah, I don't agree, 100% with that.
I don't really watch cartoons.
With kid stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
My kids see quite a lot.
Yeah. God. So, but talking about a point that Tom brought up, and I think this segues quite nicely into like the world of like workshops and stuff, because you said you dealt with like education wise, you know, teachers that want to use, like, do they want to use comics in order to help sort of in their lessons and stuff? What's been your experience there?
Definitely, some of them absolutely do. Yeah, I've been in and done workshops with schools that want to have a class of how to make a comic, how to tell a story through, visually, in a comic book format, working with kids and doing that. And that's wonderfully enriching. And a teacher who has that foresight to sort of say, this is something my kids would enjoy and get something out of is invaluable. Because
I would have absolutely adored that when I was a kid. I would have.
Yeah, oh, it's fantastic. And they respond so nicely to it. And there's ones that don't respond nicely at the start, and by the end are massively into it and have the best ideas, who don't think. Like, I had one guy who really stayed with me, a young chap, and just went, I can't think of anything. I'm not good at this sort of thing. I'm not imaginative. It's not me. And I'm like, it is you. And if you want to do it, you're going to come up with something. And he had one of the best ones in the class by the end of the hour.
Oh, you're a man of great patience, Tom. I'd have said, well, probably get home then, kid.
But no, he said, all I had to do with him was, like, well, what do you like? What's going to get you excited? He was like, I like pizza. I was like, right, draw about a pizza. Is he going to be a pizza superhero? A guy who really likes pizza? What's a good thing? He can't be this brilliant pizza superhero. And all his mates were like, loving it once he'd drawn it and got the idea out. It was fantastic. It's wonderful to see in that context. I think that,
I think I need to have a word with his parents about their diet at home, mind you, but
Well, you don't know what the pizza was, Tony. You can have all sorts of pizzas these days.
You can have a falafel pizza if you want, couldn't you?
Oh, get off with your falafel pizza. Get off. Get off with you. I've had none of that.
All this talk of Waitrose made me want some falafel.
I know, and a quinoa salad.
Oh, we're so anti-establishment.
I know. I just got to go back. I'm cooking up some bulgur wheat. Anyway, right.
Sounds good.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, Dan.
Oh, Vince, you've outed yourself.
Put down your turkey Twizzlers, Dan. We'll get you eating fruit and veg in no time.
Huge granola. Are you one of those people who gets in the office about 8:15, 9:15 and goes, I can't work yet, I've got my granola. And then they sit there and eat their gravel, whatever it is.
No.
I'd rather that than coming in at fucking when they're supposed to start and then spend 15 minutes eating their fucking breakfast. Annoying sign to my life there.
Yeah. I saw Forpy messaging about that as well. I agree.
Yeah. If you want to turn up for work, if you have breakfast, fine. But don't turn up at 9 when you start at 9 and go, right, I'm just going to go get my breakfast. Then,
I knew he'd go off. I knew he'd go off at 1.
That's my head in. Anyway. Yeah.
It's always warmed up pizza at midnight. What's wrong with that, eh?
Nothing.
Pizza's perfect. It's a perfect breakfast food as well.
Yeah, I just tip the old black coffee out of the mug, pour some vodka and heat up the bit of pizza. You know, that's it. My life.
Jesus Christ. You're like Arnold Schwarzenegger from End of Days.
Once in a lifetime for Tony.
Yeah.
I say for Tony, it was a Tuesday.
Anyway, never mind the terrible way we live our lives.
You don't wait for kids' comics, do you?
Yeah, yeah. Back to the workshops, because we've mentioned it a couple of times on the show, but we haven't gone into it sort of really in depth, have we? I know it's something that's proving to be, well, hopefully this year we'll see a lot more of them. Over the past couple of years, there's been more and more workshops in at sort of like, especially the indie shows. Do you think that's something that's going to?
A lot of the bookshops are good for it as well, man. I've got to tell you.
Oh, bookshops do it a lot as well. What, like comic book workshops?
Yeah, and drawing workshops. I know Laura Wild Goose does quite a lot. Does bookshops and does little tours of them and stuff. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And I think, do you think that's another useful, well, of course it is another useful way, but do you think that's a good way to get kids who wouldn't necessarily know about comics and then get them into comics? Because doing an art project is something different to then discovering a new passion, I guess, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think if someone shows a young person how to put down their ideas, and they're already imaginative, and they've got various different ideas, or inspired by certain things they've read in comics or seen on TV already, then they can immediately put something down on paper. And if they get a bit of directional structure around that, then it's going to be even better. I think that's going to enthuse them even more. Yeah.
I mean, what sort of thing do you like? Do you teach like from scratch, like making comics? What have you sort of taught in your workshops?
I mean, I think I have no teaching experience, so I just went on my own experience and went, here's how I do it. You know, you come up with a concept.
Lit up a cigarette, poured that glass of whiskey.
with a beer. So here's my story. No, you've got to capture them somehow. So I sort of said, look, find something that excites you, find something from your imagination, and then, right, here's what we're going to do around it. You're going to put these two factors together, and then we're going to say, right, we need a beginning, we need the middle and the end, but before that, we're going to make the character. And I think fleshing out the character really engages people. I think, what's this character like? Who are they? What is it? And that sort of stuff. And kids, I think, they just naturally latch onto that sort of stuff because their imaginations are very fertile, and then they'll go to lots of different places that I think us grown-ups may never think about.
Yeah, or if we do, it's sordid and wrong.
Yeah, at the wrong end.
But I mean, I think doing a workshop must be there's quite a bit of pressure on it. Have you done quite a few now?
No, I've only done a handful, to be honest. Only locally round the area that I am. It's
was it quite nerve wracking your first?
Absolutely,
workshop?
First one definitely. And it was, I think I was doing two on the same day, back to back. To sort of say, right, do a little presentation and then work with the class. And I figured out quite quickly that you tell them, you can stand up in front and tell them different things, but they'll soon start to tune out. And I think, you can look around the room and you think, I had them and now I'm losing them. So I'm like, right, okay, all right, I've got to draw something on the board now. I start drawing, Adventure Time characters and that sort of stuff. Right, they're back on board again now. While they're back engaged, then you can say, right, now you start, think about what you want to do, and I'm going to come around and work with you all individually. And then I think that's the way to do it. You just got to keep their attention span, because the ones that are interested, great, they're going to be on board with it. The ones that are teetering, you need to really work with them and keep them on side, otherwise they are going to drift off and not learn.
Have you, here's a question, have you got any more like new readers from any of those kids that have done the workshops?
That's a really good question. One I wish I could quantify, to be honest. a lot of website hits, because the teacher said, your homework is go on tomspark.com and look at this site.
Oh, nice.
But other than that, no, I don't know if I can quantify it, to be honest. And maybe. It's the only answer I can come up with. I hope so.
I mean, I'm not saying that people are doing workshops just to purely get sales here and be shameless. there's a few people that have been on this show. I know certainly Sarah Millman's done a few workshops in the past.
Oh, we did one all the time from Flying Eye.
Yeah. And what sort of workshops do the Flying Eye do?
It'll be stuff like if we get a book that's about, you know, the forest, animals of the forest, or animals from the, you know, mammals from the sea, we'll get them and the kids will create their own and you'll do a little seascape, or, you know, there's that sort of thing. Create a book.
Is that going to schools, or is that, like you say, bookshops, sort of?
Mostly community centres, bookshops, little people who ask us to come and do it. At some conventions we'll do it as well, stuff like that. It's they get really busy. You know, it's a good place for it's on a Saturday, you know, you've got kids and what we're going to do this Saturday. Oh, there's this sort of workshop, I'll take the kids to that. You get that quite a lot. Yeah, I think it's quite a good thing. Yeah,
how great. Spread, Tony, is that done, sort of talked about within the school, so, you know, all the kids know that it's going on, or is it out in the local press, or what? How do you advertise it?
We mostly through the venue that we're doing it in,
right? Okay, yeah.
So it's as far as I know, we don't do that many schools ones. We might, and I might have missed them, but we did one in there's a sort of community kids drop-in center in the shopping center in Hammersmith.
Brilliant.
And we did one in there recently, and it's really well attended. I mean, to be fair, Hammersmith is kind of kids' books target audience, parents, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's Hampstead, or, you know, St Albans, or, you know, it's sort of the place where there's a people who have money. And to be fair, let's be fair about it. You know, it's not, you know, it's not, I don't know, where's it's not Chatham High Street, let's face it. You know what I mean? So, with all due respect to people who live in Chatham, but do you know what I mean? It's like that.
Yeah.
So it's, and it depends, and we're always a bit nervous. I mean, we have quite a big social media reach as well.
Yeah.
The company, and it goes on to various blogs of people who are sort of book bloggers, and they hold a lot of sway. The old kids' book reviewers, you watch their numbers, they're big numbers. Yeah. There's some who are like hugely recommended. You know, if they recommend it, we'll get huge sales and that stuff like that. You know, so it's there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got one actually on there. My first actual sort of kids, you know, targeted children's book was called Brollo, about an umbrella who doesn't like the rain. It's a little Mr. Men sized book about an umbrella, funny enough. And it got a small mention on a website, on the Guardian website. As soon as that went up, I noticed the deal was sales.
That's a big one, the Observer, the Times. There's a friend of ours, actually, a friend of the show, Emma Donovan, who used to have a role at Nobrow in publicity at Nobrow, and she used to send us the books. You remember early on, guys, when we started?
Yeah.
She does a blog called Book Sniffer, and follow that, man. The book she reviews is the pile of books she has to review. Occasionally she sticks it on her Instagram. This is the to review pile. And like the posts she gets of just kids' books, and it really does shift a book if you get on one of these really important ones. You know, there's a lot of YouTube people as well who review books and for the kids, and then people take a lot of attention of it, you know.
It's a fascinating,
it really is, man. Yeah, it's a whole different world. I never realized until I went to Flying Eye, Nobrow, that it is such a different world.
All right, changing direction for a moment, and to help sell our own stuff, all of us on this show are taking part in obviously the all ages comic magazine called The Spark. Now, some of us have had work on it, and some of us are going to have work on it. Have we said that?
It's been announced. I think it's been announced on Twitter.
Announced today.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So Dan Butcher is now going to be supplying a brand new sort of strip for The Spark, aren't you, Dan?
I am indeed. Yeah. And got up pitched a strip, and it's in there in
now.
Issue 3.
Yeah, so issue 2 is almost finished, so that'll be out very soon.
Yeah.
And then, so your story kicks off as of issue 3, but to be fair, you're well ahead of it. You've drawn most of it, I think, from the looks of it.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Dan. He just smashes this stuff out. Thank you. But interestingly, is this the first straight-up all-ages work that you've done, Dan?
Comic-wise,
I think
maybe.
Yeah, I mean, a comic essentially aimed directly at kids, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I would say so. I think so. Yeah.
I mean, I know obviously you had Project Hoax and things like that, but this is now part of like an all ages kids magazine. You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, this is the youngest kind of age group of kind of drawn comic for.
So, with that in mind, What have you found thinking about a strip or like working on this kind of kids comic, and are there any questions you have, Dan?
Yeah,
don't make them too difficult because I'm editing this comic, so, and if I don't know, I'm not sure.
I mean, they can be general questions, not necessarily just about this comic.
Just kind of like very kind of chopped down to the point where it's kind of like all muscle, no gristle or fat. It's just the story straight in there. Like, give them a taste of what the comic's going to be about, and then it's one of those things. I've left. It's only a 5-page story, so by the end of it, hopefully, kids are like it, or the reader will like it or not. And if they do, it can go elsewhere. If not, it's a one and done. So it's like that.
Was that quite tricky to sort of figure out? Because
not too bad.
Essentially, you're writing a 5-page short, aren't you? Really,
it's not too bad. I mean, like, rather than sort of trying to set the world to rights in a comic or try and get some deep and meaningful themes going on, it's just a nice bit of fun and action. And I'm going to go for more kind of like pared down, simpler colors, not try to make it so heavily detailed.
So
it's like going for more legibility. I've taken a lot of looks at kind of like stuff out there. It's been working the Phoenix to kind of like, you don't need to do too much noodling and mucking around on stuff. I mean, you can do that for kids comics. I'm not saying there's a way to do it and ways to not, but this is the approach I'm going to be taking on this one.
And there's certainly like things can look deceptively detailed in a kids comic. Now, this isn't knocking anyone's work, but you know, you could look at a panel and it looks supremely detailed. It's got all the furniture and everything. But then if you really broke it down, you know, if you really stared at it, it's a bit simpler, you know, because there's no need to, like, you don't have to do something that's going to be a bit of bond dessiné, you know.
I think the thing is with the Spark, especially, is people forget it's oversized. So magazines, the magazine comic size comics that we've seen from our youth, and are still books like the Phoenix and a couple of the sort of specials that Rebellion put out. They put out like a comedy one, didn't they?
Yeah.
They you can pack more into a page. People forget that. And if you look at the example I'll probably give, is the one page stories we're doing, Vince, Monster Sports Club, is there's more in that page than you would get in an average comics page. Do you see what I'm saying? Because there's more ground to lay it out on.
I've had to draw backgrounds.
Gotcha. Yeah.
that's one of the things that really makes it stand out. And I think having seen some of Dan's roughs, it looks absolutely phenomenal. And it's going to translate to that page and look amazing.
Yeah, you need to keep their attention. I think that's what Dan's done well there, is you need to have something exciting to show them. I think a comic that is a conversation between two people ain't going to work for a kid. There needs to be action, and there needs to be fun, and there needs to be rough and tumble, and there needs to be, like, you've got space adventures, and you've got to have action in each one. And I think if you don't have it, then it's a failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also the work that Tom, you're doing for it is very sort of informative as well, and I personally love it because I love space. So, you know, what made you sort of, you're doing like space facts and like interactive stuff. I mean, you got the one page in the first one. Is it going to expand out more? I mean, what are your plans for something like this?
Yeah, it absolutely, literally is going to expand out more. I had a recent conversation, and I'm sure Aaron won't mind me saying that it's going to expand and have another page in the comic. The original conversation was, do you want to do something? And I was excited to do it. And I said, well, you know, space is obviously an exciting topic and one that has endless possibilities. And then he's come up with various different interesting things about space. Various, how much an astronaut's suit cost and that sort of stuff. And I think, I never really thought about that, but actually it's a staggering amount of money. But then to draw a little, you know, a funny little picture to go along with these, you know, it's really, really fun. Yeah, so that's going to continue in the same sort of vein, and there's going to be a bit more activity, a bit more an interactive element to it as well.
Yeah, I think activity pages are a good thing, I think, sometimes. Yeah. It prolongs the longevity of a kid's comic, doesn't it? Yeah, if you give it to them in the back seat and they read it and they're like, that's right, I've read it now.
Yeah,
the parent can say, well, do the activity, draw the thing, or whatever it is. You know, it's that sort of thing, isn't there?
Yeah.
A bit like Springworth. That's why Springworth has got all those pages at the back, to shut the kids up.
But it is word searches and stuff.
Yeah, it really is that interactive experience. I remember when I said I used to read the Beano, and my dad always used to say, same old dad joke. And I said, oh, I've read my comic now. And he said, have you done the crossword? And in a way, it was obviously a dad joke, but it's a, in a way, there should be a crossword, but not a crossword, but a word search, a maze, a puzzle, or a quiz, or something they can get their teeth into.
Yeah. I always give it the back seat of the car analogy. If this will occupy a kid on the back seat of a car for a while, for long enough for you to actually listen to the radio for 15 minutes, or it's going to be a good thing for parents. Mm-hmm. And I think you sell it in that way. To have the ability to hand something into the back seat that will occupy a kid and engross them, I think is what you need to think about when you're creating a kid's comic sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are, I mean, just to finish us off then, if... Shut up, Tony. if kids' comics are cakes, what are the ingredients? What do you need for? How'd you like that?
It's gone Partridge, Dan.
Hey,
I don't mind.
You love it. But you know what? What do you need to? You know, in your mind, what makes a good kids comic?
I think aim for a couple of years older than the market who it's being pushed. I think
that's a good idea. Yeah,
I think having that danger and that fun and that laugh and that, you know, excitement and energy of a comic, you know, I'm sure 2000 AD was not aimed at 10-year-old me, you know.
Exactly.
But hell, I thought, bloody hell, that's scary. I'm going to read that. Yeah, down there, look at that. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Don't go too far.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you don't want to go too far. You still need to know, you know, that doesn't mean you can just kill millions in the space of like five pages.
Yeah. But... stabbing a lot. Stabbing is good for kids' comics.
Stabbing.
Well, they're going to grow up to be involved in knife crime, so we may as well get them started early, aren't we?
Oh, my God. a pull-out blade on this comic.
A shim for your shoe.
Oh, yeah. A flick knife. Just sellotape to the cover.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a good idea, though, Tony. Sort of like, you know, aiming
a bit higher. Yeah. We don't want to... Otherwise, you aim it too low, don't you?
Yeah.
Don't read
and also, no one likes it when they talk... I mean, I hate watching.
No, exactly. You
see kids' stuff and you just think, you're talking down to them. This is rubbish.
Yeah.
You always get that when, if I see parents doing that, talking down to their kids like that, it's like, you're not communicating with your kid properly doing that. Like, you kind of got to talk to them as they're a person, not like you're talking.
I mean, says the man who drew a picture of him farting in his son's face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, what makes even silly, it wasn't my bum farting in his face.
Dad of the year. I think some sort of something informative is always good to have in a comic as well. I think. I mean, that's why I quite like, you know, the space facts pages, you know, something that breaks it up with, you know, you're always surprised when you walk away thinking, I think I just learned something.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. You can get something informative, a laugh in there, some action in there, and some sort of interactivity with it. I think that's the elements that you really want to hit on.
Certainly, if you're doing like anthology type comics, like the ones we're talking about. I mean, you know, you pick up any issue of the Phoenix, and this has all of that and more.
Absolutely.
In every issue, as well as like pages of fan art from kids and stuff like that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just got to be fun, isn't it? I think.
Definitely.
If it's not fun to read, and certainly as we've learned on this show, we may call it a kids' comic, but most of these things are fun for us to read as well. So we end up reading them. I think it's like for instance, The Simpsons. That covers all bases. Kids love it. Adults love it. It's been going on too long, but that's another conversation entirely.
But I think that is definitely an element that I think of when I'm doing my stuff. If an adult can enjoy it as well, or enjoy reading it with the kids,
yeah.
They're going to come back again because they're the ones with the money, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Most cynically,
I mean, we get loads of returns.
Make the dad laugh; he's going to come back and get another one.
Yeah, or shuts the kid up.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
We get loads of returns for our books at No Brow Fine Eye. There's loads of dads who can't. I see them at every convention.
Yeah. See, when you say returns, you have to clarify that's people coming back to buy new books, not buying your books and then returning.
No, we don't.
Saying this was awful, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody signed this, and it definitely isn't Luke Pearson. Oh no, yeah. I did. That was me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But certainly with publishers like Nobrow, yeah, people will come for the Hilda, but then you can sell them on the other books that.
Yeah, and people will say to me a lot of the time, they've grown up a bit with Hilda. I mean, Hilda's been going, what, 8 years now? They'll say, Rob, what's next? What's the next book? And I can say, well, what about this one? Have they thought about this one? And, yeah, and we think a lot about that, the next book onwards, you know, what they should be with, Stig and Tild or something like that. You know, there's a lot of books that come out.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep them. You've got to keep hold of the kids reading comics and
grow
them up, and eventually they'll be reading, you know, Skip and In Waves and, you know.
Yeah. Because even if they read comics, they go to college and they don't read comics for a couple of years, everyone comes back.
Comics.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's weird. I listened to that Saturday Review, which is the old Radio 4 thing, on it, and they did comic books this week.
Wow.
They did. Okay. What's that one? Laura Dean by is it Gillian Tamaki? I can remember which cousin it is. And they did one from Matt Fraction as well. Is it November? I think it's called.
I don't know.
They talked about them, and they didn't talk about. And I thought, oh, here we go. I thought I was on the treadmill, and I thought, oh, here we go. I'm going to listen to this. This will make me angry enough to run, you know. And they didn't go, oh, I didn't really understand it. It was a comic. How did you read it? They threw themselves into reviewing it, and it was superb. And I was so pleased.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And that was Radio 4, fantastic. Was it? What show was that?
Saturday Review.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, really good. Really good stuff. Really pleased. There you go. Sorry, I just thought I'd into it.
Another thing for the show notes.
Yeah.
But yes, and I think we've covered quite a few things in this talk about kids' comics. I mean, I don't know how many times we've focused on kids. We like to do it now and then because they are hugely important. Because if you don't get kids reading comics now, then in 15 years, who's going to be reading them apart from Tony,
who just
reads everything?
We're doing a list. Dan started.
Well, no. Let's put this straight. Dan made the stupid idea. you just said it, and it came out of nowhere. Why don't we list every comic we're reading this year that we read this year? I thought. What are you talking about, Dan? That's insane. Tony had already opened up his notebook.
I do have a mild curiosity to see how many comics Tony reads a year.
It has been Christmas though, over New Year. I've had a few days off, so it's sort of.
But it's
fuck me. It's
I've going to do it for a month, and then I'm going to do a blog post about my reading habits and see what's old, what's new, what's collected, what's a trade, what's a graphic novel, what companies I'm reading, and there's an interesting trend there somewhere, isn't it? And try and examine why and I'm doing that. And I'm reading a lot of old comics. If you look at the list, there's quite a few there that are 70s comics and stuff. 80s
There's comics, been a resurgence in that, you know.
I think you're right.
A lot of people going back to what older stuff where they're not satisfied with what they're being given at the moment and going back and getting essentials and digging up old issues and going to like the back issue bins.
Those epic collections are like gold dust at the moment. You try and they soon get snapped up, and people are reading stuff like Black Panther and old, you know, Mike Zeck Captain Americas and.
Yeah,
you know, there's loads of that coming out now. Because you're right, man. It's that familiarity. I remember when Captain America did this, and all, you know, people are going back to them a lot, and you see a lot of that being posted on social media as well.
Hmm. There's a lot of that kind of. I'm not sure what account it does, but they post up like on the spinner rack.
Yeah, I really like that.
Out this day, like in 1974 or whatever.
Oh, cool!
And I love that. Like,
Yeah,
twice a day they post out, and I always look to see that. I'm almost now so geeky around it. I like to be in the first 10 to like it. Yeah.
Nice.
And everyone, even like all the big comic creators, Eric Larson, all these sort of people are saying, "Oh, I read 3 out of 4. Didn't read the Star Wars," or you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for those old comics still.
Here's another question. I'm going to briefly step back into the kids' comics. Here's a question for all of you. Right, all of those people out there, including us, that have like big comic collections or old comic collections, you know, we always talk about, oh, do you remember that issue when this happened? Or, you know, when you have kids, when they get to a certain age, how do you feel about letting them get their hands on the issues that you read when you originally had them?
Yeah, I do. I let them do that.
I want to hopefully have all the trades and stuff out so like they can just dip in.
Yeah.
I imagine, I'm hoping like they're going to, Dexter come in with some of his mates, oh, your dad's got comics, and then suddenly they're in. That's the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a daydream.
since my kid was like 12, he's in his 20s now, I'd say, "Oh, go and, you want something to read? Go in the comic room and grab a trade." And he'd come out with five or six that he'd grabbed. You know.
But what about the individual issues? Because I know you've got some old ones, Tony.
I don't know. The long boxes are piled up. He's got his own long boxes now. But I think so. Especially if we'd been to the comic shop and we're in the car. Mm. And I said, "I'll go through and have a look, see what you want to read." He might go through what I'd bought that week sometime.
Because I think with the collector mentality, some people can be a bit too precious.
Oh, no, about... like that. They're for reading with me.
Yeah. And that's the way it should be. I think if you want your kids to read comics, let them read comics.
Unless you've got a copy of, I don't know, Giant Size One or, you know, Detective Comics, blah, blah. Yeah. Then otherwise, I think you're right, man. Yeah.
But you'll probably have that in an airtight vault anyway, won't you?
I like airtight.
Anyway, that was. Thank you for joining us for that chat, Tom.
Yeah, that's good. That was great.
Cheers, Tom. Yeah, that blazed by.
Yeah, great to hear more about workshops and stuff as well. So,
yeah. If anyone's got any workshops coming up, please let us know because we'd love to publicise them.
I mean, like I say, we're usually the last to know about these things, so please.
We didn't even talk about the Etheringtons. How did we do that?
I know. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I think normally when we talk about kids' comics, they are front and centre in the conversation. So it just goes to show.
They do some great workshops.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, workshops, and you just watch any clip of them online talking about just comics in general. That's people who love the medium and just want everyone to read comics.
Yeah, wonderful.
God bless them. We love them. And they do amazing books, but we don't need to tell you that. Just look at, you know. they're driving flashy cars and their houses are made of gold. It's that Kickstarter money, baby. Anyway, speaking of Kickstarters, I don't know if we have any this week, but do we have any shout-outs?
No, I've got a comic that's going to be on Kickstarter quite soon, but we haven't announced it yet. So if you do pay attention to Adam Phelps' Twitter and Instagram feed, and you'll get a few little hints about it. But that is certainly not an all-ages comic. As you know, but just watch out for that one. I'll give a little shout to Lyndon White, our friend Lyndon White. He sent me through Reanimator Incorporated.
I can't wait to see this.
Fucking hell, man, this is good. I think this is definitely his strongest cover, and some of the artwork inside it is really nice, class stuff. There's a real strong line to it he's got going on in it, and some really lovely single page spreads. I mean, I'll put something up on the blog at some point this week with some images from it, but I was reading it earlier this week. Lovely, lovely stuff. Really good.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my only shout.
Nice. And the convention season officially kicks off February the 1st, Saturday, February the 1st, 2020 for us with the True Believers Comic Festival taking place in the Jury's Inn in Cheltenham. There's loads of indie creators going to be there. It's a 100% independently run comic convention event. And it's all about comic books. I mean, we've had the guys on the show and vice versa and stuff, and it's a great event. Me and Dan are going to be there. Tony's living the life in the Costa del Sol. I mean, he's going to Angoulême.
Going to France.
So, and we're going to try and get some audio from the event. I think Tony's going to try and get some audio as well. So around that time, around that show, you might have loads of cool audio from the people that were there. And I know there's some great books launching. It's becoming a show that a lot of people are launching books at as well.
Yeah, we're about to talk about one, aren't we?
Yeah. So it's like True Believers. People launch books at True Believers and people launch books at Thought Bubble. There's a nice sort of bookend to the year, I think, with those two events. So yeah, definitely check it out. Go to oktruebelievers.com and the tickets are on sale now. So if you want to be there, you definitely should be there because we'll be there. Oh, mate, no, that's not a good selling point, is it? A good selling point is, on the exhibitor page, there's a lot of Kevin Bacon. Enough said. Yeah. Everything's better with bacon, unless you're vegetarian.
Veggie bacon. I had some veggie bacon.
No. There's no such thing as veggie bacon. Oh, God, I've just revealed myself as a crotchety old man. You know, I'm the guy that when I read the word "faken," I actually audibly say.
I've never heard that in my life.
I actually audibly say "fuck off" in the street when I read it.
You're that bloke who mumbles to himself at bus stops, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, you knew that anyway.
There's some bloke in St Albans who every time I see him, he asks me the time, and literally he did it to me again the other day and said, "Mate, fuck off."
Why don't you buy him a watch?
Told you, I ain't got a fucking watch.
Shall I tell you that bloke, the story of the barber? I've told you.
Right, that's, okay. Buckle up and prepare yourself, because Dan Butcher's about to tell a story, and you know it's always good when he does that.
I was getting the haircut in the barber's, and there was like some bloke in there with his kids, and he was just like talking about his life generally, and he was in there for about 5-10 minutes just talking absolutely deadpan. Like, it wasn't telling jokes, he was just telling about his life. And he said, oh, yeah, I've been doing some exercise since New Year. And the barber's like, oh, yeah, what have you been up to? He goes, well, instead of pissing in the garden, I've been going up to the toilet upstairs. That burns off calories, didn't it? I was like, fucking hell. And, his two kids are sitting there, like, looking at the phone, watching a cartoon or whatever. There's some of the stuff is coming out. It was all coded, but... I was like, Jesus Christ.
You should have made a note of it, and then you could have done like a little sort of autobiographical zine or something, Dan.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go to get a haircut every week, hoping then that bloke comes back.
Embarrassing father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should end it with his plants growing in the garden again.
I wonder what he's like with drinking him. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Because he was saying how he put 6 packs of butter on the turkey and telling these stories and showing everyone in the shop, like the picture on their phone.
What?
This fucking massive turkey covered in butter.
I miss kids like that. You used to see them in the pub. They used to come in the pub and you think, here we go, this is going to be funny. We're off out. Then annoying. Then I'm leaving. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Oh, God. From such highbrow content to our our recommendations for this week. Who should we have? Dan,
you note from Tom, because like I was listening to Wire Comics and he said don't make half-hearted recommendations essentially.
Right.
I was like, I've done that. I've really done that. So I was halfway through a Moon Knight trade and I'm still undecided on it, so I'm not going to say yay or nay. I'm going to hang fire on that. So
Dan is bowing out.
I've got two, but you want to join in on one, don't you, V?
Yeah.
Yes.
This one you guys about to talk about, I've not read it because I want to buy it and get into it clean. So
yeah, should we start off with that one and then throw it over to Tom? Should we do that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a bit about The King by John Tucker.
Yes.
It's his new release. He sent it out a matter of hours ago to reviewers and to us. It's 44 pages, full colour, A5, £3. Look at that, good price.
Mm-hmm.
Launches, as we've just discussed, at True Believers on the 1st of February. But there is a caveat in that we can't talk about the last 2/3 of the book because something happens. In typical John Tucker style, something happens that could kind of ruin people's enjoyment, a little bit of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, what do you think, V?
Yes, I think much like most of John's work, you need to go in like not knowing as little as possible. I think, to be honest, with his work, people just when they recommend it, they say, "Look, you just got to get this book. Trust me."
Yeah, there's always a little spoiler. Yeah. There's always a little twist, a little quirk, a little something that happens. I actually think this is his best book. I'm going to say that it's the one that I've. Probably, I literally read it as soon as it landed, as I do with all John's stuff, in the Dropbox, and it is really good. So, all I can say, there's a lady called Gwen, and she works with a lot of sort of travelling rock bands. She writes to her brother and her sister-in-law from the road with her sort of shenanigans and goings-on and what she's up to. And sadly, Gwen passed away, but she sent her brother and his sister and his wife a box. In this box was an egg, a very large egg, and this is the story of that egg.
It was a golden egg, wasn't it?
Golden egg, and that's about as far as we can go with that.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, something happens to that egg, and maybe let's see what comes out of it. But that's the story. That's as far as we can go with that.
Yeah,
and it's very funny. It's very silly. It's very strange, as is all of John's stuff. There's a sort of
so beautifully
goggle-eyed madness about his stuff.
Yeah, but there's a such a beautifully understated normality about something that is quite insane. and I think that's the best way to say it. You know, it's normal insanity because. It is
suburban insanity, I'm going to say. It's normal people with something just fucking nuts goes on.
Yeah.
It's like that, isn't it?
Yeah. And,
great.
And this one is also, it's actually the piece of his work that when I finished it, it was actually quite emotional.
Well, I messaged him saying, right, this is about people who get a dog for Christmas. It was my crazy take on it. He said, I can't say what he said back.
I want to say what one of the things I think it's about, but I can't. So,
okay. Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it?
But obviously, it'll be at True Believers. I think we're preaching to the converted for a lot of our listeners.
Everyone knows John. John turned up in a lot of the faves from this year list, didn't he?
He started this year strong. I know there's going to be even more books from him this year.
Yeah, he's got a longer form thing coming after that. He's got a collection coming after that, I think I'm allowed to say.
Because the longer form thing is a thing about the frogs and... Oh, I've forgotten the name of it. What is it when everyone on the earth disappears in a religious event? What's it called?
The rapture.
The rapture. That's it. For a split second, my mind just went blank. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, John. I think it's to do with the rapture and frogs. I mean, I have no idea what it's going to be about, but I'm already buying it.
I know he's like one and done as he does. He's got his own little corner of the comics small press world, isn't he? Like I said, we'll talk about Fantagraphics in a minute. Fantagraphics should be publishing his stuff.
I think one of the things that people don't say enough about John's work, obviously he's hilarious, he's got the driest sense of humour in the world and we love it. Anyone who's met him will know this, and he's putting out great books, but also there's a lot of like feeling and emotion, and there's real heartfelt sentiment that goes through a lot of these stories that I don't think enough people sort of pick up on or shout about. If you look back to a lot of the books, like Adrift, there's certainly a lot of stuff going on and things like that.
That's good. So if you go over to www.johntucker.co.uk, you can buy a raft of his books.
Yeah.
And if you go to @JohnTuckerArt, you can find him on Twitter.
Yeah. And he's actually showed a little bit of the book on his Twitter account. So check that out.
Yeah.
I don't think it's available to buy at the moment. Here's Franktober of...
I've got that.
Frank Sidebottom is beautiful as well.
Really good.
So, from Tucker to Tom. Tom, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
This was tough for me, because obviously I've heard over the years many, many people giving their recommendations, and I thought the pressure was on to deliver with the goods. And I was thinking, what are my all-time favourites? I was thinking, The Goon is one of my all-time favourites. Chew by John Layman was one of my all-time favourites. And then more recently, his Outer Darkness, which was one of... Was it one of yours, Vince's?
Yeah. Don't get me started. I'll just talk about that book all night. But carry on.
Absolutely loved it. And I got it off him at one of the MCMs. Directly off him, he said, this is my new thing. I'm just absolutely fell in love with it. But anyway, what I settled on was one from a couple of years ago, because you guys said this didn't have to be anything proper new. It's new to me, and I only read it in the last month or so, and that's Gateway City. I know all three of you guys will know it, but it was the one. It's my standout for the last year. I think just the book that I picked up and absolutely adored. It's pulpy. It's out there. It's kind of fantastical. It's exciting. It's a perfect book in my opinion. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, nice. I mean there's a good reason why Russell Mark Olsen came up in a lot of people's best of lists. Yeah.
He's got a class turn of phrase, and he's a great artist as well. I got a couple of commissions from him, and he did me a badger. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah.
I've got a Miss Marple that he did. That was just
you sexy beast.
Yeah, well, you know, I always go for the real sexy ones when I
Is that a close up brown eye or
no. What of Marple?
How can you tell it's from I was you mean not okay.
Yeah, I just have commissions of famous like detectives, but it's just their bum holes.
Just bum hole. It's a bum hole collection.
This one's Columbo. Clearly,
all you got to draw.
Columbo.
All you got to draw is an asterisk. Let's face it. That's it, isn't it?
Oh God, I don't know. Give Tony a pencil, and all of a sudden, now he knows how to draw everything.
Balloon knot.
Anyway. Disgraceful behaviour. So, for that, Tony, you can go next.
Oh, okay. So, I'm going to review a book that's quite old as well, actually. It's a book out of Fantagraphics that I hadn't previously read, and I tend to look at all their stuff. And it's called House. It's created by Josh Simmons. Anyone read it?
No.
It's a black and white, wordless book. Came out in 2007. I'm going to say the style is not dissimilar at first view to Chester Brown, who I've talked about a few times on the show. It's much more detailed in the backgrounds, and there's a slightly stronger, harder line than Brown's work. It starts out reasonably simply. It starts out as something straightforward. A man finds he wanders into the woods and he finds a sort of series of conjoined, derelict, stately manors, stroke houses, boarded up right in the middle of the forest, and they're all sort of overgrown. They're all boarded up and they're all broken down inside. And he meets two girls and they go exploring. And initially, it starts off quite innocently, and they're all about the fun. And the kids go swimming. And they're diving off the side of buildings into this big swimming pool, and it's kind of cutesy to start with in a way. The man he begins to kiss the blonde girl, and there's a relationship builds up between them slowly, sort of tentatively. And then they find a hidden panel, and they get torches. He's got a head torch, and the other girls have got torches, and they climb in behind this sort of hidden panel into the corridors and the hidden spaces behind the walls. And it could easily, I think, at this point have taken what you might expect to be a supernatural turn, but it doesn't. It plays it slightly straighter than that. And it plays with the darkness, the frightening bits of the darkness and the helplessness of the, and the claustrophobia of being in this sort of tightly packed area, and they get lost and you don't know where they are. You know, we all have that recurring nightmare of not being able to find something, don't we? You know, of being lost. And they walk around this, and as they're walking around the stairs break, and then one of the blonde girl falls downwards, and she falls downwards so badly she breaks her leg quite badly, and she's sort of, her clothes are all ripped and she's covered in blood and she's got no water and she's lying there just a broken figure. But rather than trying to save her, the man just carries on. And they all get separated, and he's got this sort of pit helmet torch, you know, like those sort of head torches that people wear. Some runners wear them, don't they? And it just, and he finds us, he sees in the distance, in his sort of, you kind of figure he's hallucinating a little bit, a sort of shadowy figure. So he thinks, oh, I'm going to follow him. He'll lead me out of here. And the character just keeps ahead of him, and he gets into this tunnel, and slowly he gets into this smaller tunnel and keeps crawling. And the other, the dark-haired girl hurts herself, and she's sort of crawling about damaged. And it becomes like really nightmarish. It's sort of really that sort of confined space nightmare that we all have. It just turns into that. And it's black and white, wordless, and by the end of it it's mostly darkness. And I read it on the guided view, and as you sweep it, the views get smaller and smaller, and you realize how confined they are and how trapped they are and how damaged and broken they are, and there's no way they're getting out. And it's just this really, really sort of frightening, fucked up kind of world. And it doesn't end on a happy note. It doesn't end well, you know. I'd recommend it, though. I kind of like the fact that it goes that way. It doesn't pander to, oh, everyone's happy ending, or it doesn't pander to any sort of supernatural, you know, there's no, oh, there's a werewolf in the darkness, or, you know, there's no sort of obviousness about it all. And it plays on our fears and our bad dreams and our fears of being powerless, I suppose. But it also has this sort of angle that I found really interesting, which was the book deals with the selfishness of youth. The characters are happy to let people suffer so long as they don't have to. They don't really help each other because it will affect themselves. They don't go to the aid of anyone. They want to get out themselves. They're interested in that sort of dopamine pinging moment of pleasure, for example, when they go swimming, or, you know, he kisses the girl. But it sort of plays on that fact that everyone is only out for their own needs. And there's also a sort of a real nihilistic feeling on shows, an objective refusal to show the purpose to the life, because it just ends so tragically for no reason. They're not pawns of a haunted house, but they're more sort of pawns of their own destructive selfishness. It's really interesting. It's an exercise just from beginning to end. I don't suspect there will be a second one. And it's just this black and white, nihilistic, dark nightmare of a book, and it's just really, really interesting, and it looks pretty as well. It looks really nice. And there's a reason that Fantagraphics are all over this kind of book. I can't really see that many other companies putting out a book like this. And you know, it's just quirky darkness and, you know, individual style, and yeah, really interesting stuff. Nice. I won't bother giving anyone social media because it's came out years ago, but you can find it on Comixology. It's I think it was like a £5 or £6 on Comixology, but I think it's sort of 40-50 pages long. Really interesting stuff. Yeah, I like that sort of thing. There you go.
Nice. Right.
Nice, yeah.
And cool. To finish off, my recommendation is one that I mentioned about on social media a couple of days ago, and it's got I merely said I read this, loved it, it's great for kids of all ages, you know, you should definitely get it for your kids or whatever, and the creator retweeted it and it's become one of my more popular tweets I've had in a long time, which is good. You know, I was just talking about how good a book was. I you know, if that's the sort of tweet that becomes popular, then let's have more of it. Yeah, I was talking about a book published by Kaboom or Boom Studios. It was released a couple of years ago. It's from Sam Davies, a female that I met at Thought Bubble, female creator. She just popped over right at the end of the show to sort of say she's a listener of the show. So hello, Sam. Nice. And said, "Oh yeah, I really enjoy the show." You know, she gave me one of the cards, and it was a book that I was wanting to check out at some point. But her book is Hex Vet. Now, there's probably a few people out there know it. Well, quite a few people, judging from the internet. But yeah, the first book came out in December 2018, where it did on Comixology, so Comixology says, because that's where I picked up my copy, of Hex Vet, Witches in Training. Now, basically, it's about literally that. It's about vets in training, but they're actually witches, so they're dealing with like supernatural creatures, you know, like strange bugbears, or, you know, what happens if your phoenix breaks its wing, that kind of thing. Then it is taken to this veterinary practice, the Willow's Whisper veterinary practice, and yeah, these are the people that have to deal with it. It's not dark, spooky, it's a very brightly lit sort of book, and it's just a really, really fun and lovely read, actually. It was on my to read part. I picked it up and then I was just waiting for the time to sort of sit down and read it, because it's 75 pages, the first one. I think I picked it up for like £3.50 on Comixology. It's full colour, and I just breezed through it. You know, it's lovely, sort of clean, crisp artwork. It's very much, I mean, it does say in the synopsis that it's perfect for fans of the T-Dragon Society and Steven Universe, but I don't know either of them. No. But it definitely has a style that, you know, I can, in a couple of years, much like you're seeing a lot of like, these graphic novels just get signed up for Netflix animated shows, this is tailor-made for some sort of animated show, and it would make a great sort of episodic show. But whether it does or not doesn't matter, because the comic is bloody brilliant, and I think kids would love it. And certainly you meet, this book is brilliant, you get to know the two main characters, Clarion and Annette. They're the two trainees. They're the ones we're following through the whole story. One of them has really mean-looking eyes. Looks like, well, basically, if you know the Moomins, and there's, yes, Snufkin. That's the one. I was loath to bring it up, but you know that mean-looking face of that character. Annette has that sort of, you know, she comes from a darker sort of witch background. Yes, there's a little bit of in this book, there's a little bit of a universe being built up, but it's more just a bit of fun, you know. A rabbit comes in, a stray rabbit is brought in, and it's got these weird things going on with its eyes, and they put it to one side, and sure enough, that rabbit escapes and starts causing havoc to all the other creatures. I won't spoil what else, there's other things that happen about it. There's another couple of supernatural creatures that I absolutely loved in this book. But it was great. It just really flows. A great introduction to the characters. I'm going to get there's another graphic novel. It has, obviously, it's done well for Boom, and they're putting out more of this. And I'm presuming there's going to be another graphic novel on the way as well. But so, yeah, look for Hex Vets. I know it's already got a lot, like probably a growing legion of fans. It's that sort of, Boom put out a lot of books that certainly they get a good group of fans, don't they, for Boom. Do really well, I think, in terms of the indie publishing market. They know what they're doing, Boom Studios. If you think, how long have they been around now?
Oh, donkey's years, yeah. They're a mainstay now, aren't they?
But they still feel fresh. It still feels like they're just putting out a lot of like new content. I mean, obviously this one came out in 2018, but it's new to me and I love it. So yeah, and great work. Hope to see more from Sam. She said she could pop over and say hello earlier at Thought Bubble this year if she if she's there. So yeah, I thoroughly recommend it. It's a great book for kids as well. I thought it was a timely book to read with this week's episode, and I think kids would really get into it. So I don't know whether it's single issues. The ones I've seen have been collected graphic novels, but
right.
Either way. And I'm sure if it's Boom, they do printed copies as well. Don't they? They do good.
Yeah. I'm sure they do.
Yeah. So have a look for Hex Vets, because it's a great little series that you're probably going to hear even more from in the next couple of years. It's a series I can just see like taking off, absolutely taking off. So yeah, that's mine. So
nice.
Yeah. So nice one. A great collection of books, as always, to start off the year. And a lot of fantastic comic book talk. And thank you again, Tom, for joining us for the first show of 2020.
Total Woo! Pleasure. Thank you. It's been fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Cheers, Tom.
We've known about Tom for quite some time. I know we've met him a couple of times at shows.
Not in a bad way.
Dan nice even did a Dan did another podcast with him.
Yes. It was actually a video thing, wasn't it?
It was a porn thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry. I never got released.
It was
it'll get leaked one day. You need to buy a new house. It'll be leaked.
A fucking Wendy house.
Yes, but it's been another great show, and yeah, we've got more lined up. Lots of different stuff lined up for the first couple of months of this year, which is great. Some returning guests as well, and talking about a lot of great books. But if you're launching something, if you've got something new, if there's a workshop, if there's any kind of event that you want us to share about, please let us know.
See those new books.
Yeah, let's see those new books. Let's hear about those new events. Let's just spread the word about just good comics and just, you know, positive times in comics, because Lord knows we need them these days. Yeah. So, yeah, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We haven't done a competition in a little while, have we?
No. That's true. Mm. So I can drag up tomorrow.
Yeah.
When I'm in the office.
Yeah. Oh, my word. Yeah. I'm just going to leave that there. Yeah. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. We'll be announcing guests. And just trying to get the word out about the show, which I think for this year, we're going to try and make an effort to get this show out to even more people, because the more people that listen to this show, the more our ego grows. I mean, the more people learn about the comics we talk about, or maybe they learn something about making their comics. Who knows? But anyway, if you also do Facebook, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where we post up the latest episodes, etc. And if you want to talk about comics and making comics, and if you're active on Facebook groups, etc., then you really must join the Awesome Comics Talk group on Facebook. It's fantastic. There's lots of fantastic artwork, discussion, and creativity going on there without any hard selling. Because we're the admins, and we don't let any of that through.
Take that shit out.
So if you're just gonna join the group to try and share a link for your Kickstarter without getting involved or anything, then we don't want you.
You won't get past us anyway. There's no point, is there?
And to be honest, the people that do try that probably don't listen to this show. I've just wasted 30 seconds of my life
on that social scum. Like that.
Yeah. But hopefully you didn't waste your life listening to this episode. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If it was on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about this show, etc. And if you listen to us on any networks, such as Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, the one that was brought to my attention by our guest, our kind guest, was Pod, A Hairy Arsehole Is Not a Deal Breaker.
can recommend.
This is what happens. We have a guest on, and then Tony corrupts them by the end.
I was just wondering, when do I draw the picture of Tony's testicles?
Yeah, thank you.
Well,
it's coming.
Once we go off air, he'll put the webcam on, and you can sketch them.
You get a book.
Which one's the French one again?
Pascal.
Yeah, Brian's the dead one.
R.I.P. Brian.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. I'm eating Cumber this week, and a Seaside lollipop.
Yeah. Pardon? Ooh, watch yourself. Anyway,
say hello to Cliff for us.
Ciao.
He's a ledge.
Okay. Yeah, good boy.
But where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter, neverinanything.blogspot.com.
Nice. Daniel?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which is up and cooking with gas.
Yes, we're back.
Yes. How many issues, I mean, how many issues have you got left of Vanguard?
Fuck knows.
That's the mystery. Keep them tuning in. You can find more of my artwork, etc., on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo. And Tom, where can they find you and all of your comics and work?
All of my stuff is up at tomspark.com. That's Spark with an E. And I'm on Twitter at Sparkface, S-P-A-R-K-E-F-A-C-E.
Nice. Go forth, follow him up, and check out his work, and buy lots of his comics, especially if you've got kids. So there you go. Get some of Tom's work for your kids. Thank you very much for listening to the first one of 2020. What are we going to do now, gents? We're going to try and figure out what we're going to do over the next couple of months, aren't we?
We've got loads of guests.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a few lined up now, so you've got a sexy one for next week.
Yeah.
All our guests are sexy.
What?
They all are. The only time it's not sexy is
I'm
when
telling
it's just...
everyone you've said that. Who's ever been on the show.
What?
Vince says you're sexy.
Yeah, because you know what? You are, people. You are. And even
I'm
those...
send your winky gif.
Oh. Oh, my word. Tom'sWinkyGifts.com.
Winky gif.
Oh. Dear God.
His one-eyed winky gif.
Oh. On that disgraceful animated bombshell. Thank you for listening, folks. From Dan, Tony, Tom, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. Get kids reading comics. And as always, what do they do, lads?
Stay awesome.
Even the guests tried then, and you are all terrible. Bye, everyone.
Love you.
See ya.
Cheers.
Feel free to sketch Tony's bollocks if you want to, you lunatic.
I'll give it a go. I'm a bit drunk now. See ya. Hey.
Hey. All the best interactions with Tony's bollocks are done when drunk.
Yeah.
When he used to drink, that was the only time anyone ever saw him.
Yeah.
Mostly up off his lunches when they'd appear on people's shoulders whilst eating.
Lucky, man.
That's where he got banned from Zizzy's. Ha ha ha!